Happy Sunday and welcome to The Conversation. I'm your host, Ed Clark. It is Sunday, August 24th, 2025. And thank you so much for taking the time to join us. Sherelle James is here as always. Hey, Sherelle.
Hey, hey, hey. How you doing?
I'm okay. Trying to get back into the swing of things. As folks know, I mentioned it when I was on last Sunday, when we were on last Sunday, I had to have a medical procedure. And so I'll say again, please, if you're not having normal routine health screenings, please do so. It can save your life. And I take it very serious. I had a condition called anomalous right coronary artery. And in addition to that, some blockage in my left coronary artery that needed to be attended to. And as a result, I feel much better, Sherelle. You can attest to how bad I was feeling. Didn't know exactly why. And then made the necessary appointments and got it done. And so I'm back on the mend. So what that means is, some of the stuff that we want to do here at WENC, the new Power 1220, it has been delayed a little bit, but we're on track. We're getting back on track. So in the coming weeks, you'll see a temporary studio at the location right up the street from where we are here on Radio Road. And that temporary studio should be up and running. We're hoping by the end of September. You'll still get a lot of the pre-programmed music, gospel during the day. So starting at 6 a.m. Through 6 p.m. We have a lineup of gospel during the day, during the week. And then on the weekends, we got still gospel, but we have other programming as well. Some talk programming, public affairs, those kind of things, stuff like this. And then we'll also have our Sunday sermon that you can always hear after we're done. Stick around for that. The message this week is a part two from Life Changers Church. So make sure you stick around for Reverend Holmes and his message this week. And then a lot of other things that are coming up, Sherelle. So we also need to do some improvements to the physical structure. So the transmitter is going to be under repair. So we'll announce that in plenty enough time because we'll probably need to be off the air for a day or two to get those things done. So we're making big changes and we're hoping that you guys stick around and be part of the community. We're still getting in notes and letters from people and phone calls. So if you don't get a call back immediately, it's because, we got so many things going on in the background. In the meantime, stay right here, on WENC for the rest of the day, like I said, for our Sunday sermon and also for more gospel music this afternoon. After 6 o'clock, we go off the air broadcast, but we're still on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, streaming worldwide on WENCradio.com. And then today, I did something different, Sherelle. I programmed in some disco music. So it's starting at 6 o'clock. There's some disco. So if you want to get into 70s nostalgia, we got some disco today. We also have some regular old good soul music after that, and then reggae, and then some jazz overnight. And then we'll be back on at 6 o'clock in the morning for more gospel music. In the meantime, Sherelle, what I want to start out with, and I think people have gotten an idea what this show is about, is we start off on the international level, and then we work our way down to Columbus County if we can. There were a lot of people at the White House this past week, Sherelle, from overseas. The French president, the Italian prime minister, different people were in, and also the president of Ukraine. Because the president had met with Vladimir Putin the week before in Alaska, and that did not turn out like anybody expected. Well, I'm not sure. Let me rephrase that. There was no resolution to the Ukrainian war. Now, all during the campaign, Donald Trump promised that within a day he would settle this and it would be over and everything would be hunky-dory. As soon as Vladimir Putin left Alaska, they bombed Kyiv and killed more civilians. And there was a general escalation of things. Then he immediately turned around and asked Zelensky to come to D.C. along with these other European leaders. And no agreement was reached from that either. I'm starting to wonder, Sherelle, if there is any agreement to be had that's going to be brokered by the United States. I don't know if you've thought about this, but based on what you've seen from what happened in D.C. this past week with Zelensky and Trump. Now, Zelensky and Trump seem not to be quite as at odds as they had been in the past, but there was no real substantial movement as far as I could tell. How about you? I mean, have you thought about that at all?
No, it seems like there has been some kind of turn, right, of where things were originally going and where they're going now, especially with what happened after the meeting with Putin. You would think that there would have been some contentions or aid or something and not bombing and, you know, just the other extreme. So I don't know. But I do feel like the course that we currently were on before that has been shifted. And I think that does have to do with when Zelensky was here before and some of the things that came out of that in the ways that we maybe attacked him a little bit, even on dress down to dress of how he appeared. You got to take all of that and you say, well, why would she bring up dress and the fact that they, because he wears t-shirts everywhere he goes for the most part. Mm-hmm. And he came the way he's always, you know, the way he rules, the way he shows up to meetings, he came. And that was something that was attacked as well, along with other things that were happening and going on of wanting to give more to Russia, him asking Zelensky to give more to Russia, you know, more land and things to Russia and things of that nature. And I don't know. I don't know if Zelensky went back and was like, wait a minute. You know, sometimes you just feel some kind of way when you thought you're coming for aid and help or someone to just, you know, kind of be that middle person to make things better for both sides. And it felt like they were trying to take more and then attack him personally at the same time. That's my opinion. Let me just say this for our audience. That was my opinion. but inside of that, I do think that Zelensky had time to calm down. He came back with a blazer. And so, so I think that was a sign that, okay, I'm going to try to work things out with the U.S. You know, I want to present myself in the way that maybe they think I should present myself. But even in all of that, I don't know if we've I think a corner was turned that wasn't positive for Ukraine. And I don't know if that corner can be turned back.
Yeah.
Who knows?
That's a good point. I want to remind you, you're listening to The Conversation on WENC, the new Power 1220 here in Whiteville, North Carolina. We're having a general conversation today, just me and Sherelle. We had a guest last week, Sherelle, and we talked about a wide range of things, including school funding and economic development in communities and those kind of things. So I want to remind you, if you have something to say and you want to talk about the community and things that are going on in southeastern North Carolina in the Cape Fear region, we'd love to have you on. So make sure you contact us with your information and we can get you on. Sherelle, the other thing that I've been looking at this week, so let's move a little bit closer in. So that's some international news. On the national front, the economy still is kind of in a weird situation. The economic reports came out, like the last jobs reports and some revisions and some other reports on the economy, show that the economy is slowing, that prices are starting to creep up. We haven't hit a real, I would say, inflationary period that would go on record as being, you know, a recession. But it doesn't look good. On top of that, one of the things that I saw a news story. I'm trying to remember where I saw it is. I think it was in the Seattle Times, but it was actually in the New York Times. I'm sorry, about how there was an increase in spending right before school started back and most kids are back in school. But obviously that was due to people buying for school, right? Buying school clothes and those kind of things. But the reason why spending seemed to have not gone down is because prices were higher. So people actually bought less in terms of number of things, but they paid more for it. So it's going to make the numbers not look quite as bad. And that overall spending is staying at sort of the same level, right? Because you spend a dollar, but it's like going to the dollar store now. I went there last night and everything's $1.25, right? So I had less items for the same, you know, $6 that I spent, right? So I had to buy some spoons, Sherelle.
We had inflation of the $25. You're right. But it's costing more for those same items.
Yeah, so you're the money person, Sherelle. What have you seen in terms this week of any of the economic news about where we are? I know you've been fond of saying that, you know, we're sort of cautionary and we're just kind of waiting things out. But any economic news you saw this week that makes you feel good, better, the same, or you're still waiting?
Yeah, well, you know, there was a meeting at Jackson Hole, Wyoming, with a federal chair, Jerome Powell, and you know, he didn't say that he was changing or, you know, rates cuts were happening, but his talk definitely did signal rates cuts. He talked about tariffs being a portion of the slowdown when we talk about supply chain. He talked about immigration laws being reasons why our labor is not where it needs to be, right? More people not coming in or being deported means that you don't have the labor pool there for the jobs that are needed, things of that nature. And so to me, it made it seem like they're starting to look at some of the other nuances than just the normal nuances that they take into considerations when they look at rate cuts to understand that the economy is not, we've never been in this place with a lot of the executive changes that have happened from this administration, how they've played a big impact on what needs to happen with rate cuts and things of that nature. And so we'll see. September is when that happens and they let us know. But I will let you know that just with his talk of kind of signaling without saying, yes, we're going to have rate cuts, but just kind of the way the talk went, stocks were up. Mortgage rates looked like they were coming down a little bit and stocks were going up a little bit. So who knows? Making the economy, just his talk. So we know that how powerful he is, because every time he speaks, depending on what he says, it really has a big impact overall on the economy when we talk about stocks and rates and things of that nature. And so who knows? We're waiting till September, but who knows?
Yeah, but you know, something also happens every time Donald Trump says something. And mm-hmm. again, the tariff rates, he's been completely wishy-washy on them. That's the best word I can use, because right now there's 50% duties on stuff coming from Brazil. And the reason why is because Donald Trump likes this guy named Jair Bolsonaro, who used to be the president of Brazil, who styled himself to be just like Donald Trump. But he also led a insurrection against the Congress in Brazil to match what happened when Donald Trump lost in 2020. The difference is that in Brazil, he was arrested and banned from running from office. And so to retaliate, Donald Trump has imposed 50% tariffs on Brazil. Now, what's problematic for people who drink coffee in the United States is a lot of the coffee that the United States consumes comes from Brazil. So there's been an increase in coffee prices. There's a lot of sugar that comes from Brazil. They grow a tremendous amount of sugar cane and sugar beet in Brazil. Mm-hmm. So a lot, and also they grow a lot of corn. So a lot of corn sugar in, and so a lot of the materials needed to make prepackaged things in the United States has crept up. So cereal and stuff like that is creeping up. There's also 35% tariffs on places like Vietnam. So if you like cashews, your cashew prices are going up. And the reason why I know, Sherelle, is because I have a business that imports product from different places. And one of those products that we import is cashews. And where we get our cashews from, there is no tariff or no high tariff. There is a tariff. It's
10%.
10% tariff. But where most cashews in the United States come from, Vietnam, it's a 35% tariff. So we've been in negotiations with people to talk about replacing where they get their cashews from in Vietnam with cashews from Africa and Tanzania, because currently they have a better tariff rate. And then back to those prices that we were talking about in terms of school clothes, a lot of the T-shirts and things you get are from Bangladesh, right? Well, if your kid is going back to school and you wanted to go run over to Target or Walmart and get a T-shirt, chances are it came from Bangladesh. And it may be because of that, they didn't get such a good tariff rate. And so people aren't thinking about those kind of things, Sherelle. And my fear is that we'll get accustomed to these higher prices. We'll never know exactly what the tariff rate is going to be. There were not 90 deals in 90 days. I know that much. If there's been five deals, we would be hard pressed to prove that there are five workable deals that benefited the United States. I know that they've tried out people on the Sunday shows. And if you watch the shows this morning, there were representatives from the Trump administration saying that the economy is great. The economy is not great. It hasn't collapsed, because I don't want that to happen either. So we're caught in this dichotomous situation, Sherelle, where we know things need to improve. We want the economy to be better. But we also know that the policies right now are all over the place, from foreign policy, where we started out talking about Russia and Ukraine, right, to the economic policies that around tariffs that don't seem to be giving us any benefit. And so if you had to buy school clothes for your children, you paid more and got less this year. You just did. And there's no way to couch it. There's no way to say that any different or whatever. And then there's also pressure on companies like Intel, like semiconductor companies or whatever, to provide money to go into the federal government to make offset some of the tax cuts that were approved in the big, beautiful bill that they're trying to hide within the tax cuts. So every time you buy a computer and it has Intel chip inside, you're probably going to be paying a premium for it so that money can go to the federal government in the form of, I don't even know what to call it, Sherelle. It's almost like an internal tariff, right? It's like just directed at that company to pay a bribe, right? So that they don't get smacked about in public, so that Donald Trump doesn't come down on them. They have to pay 10% of their company. So you know what that means. If you buy Intel product, that means you're going to pay more for it, because they're going to pass that on to the consumer. You know what? I hear some music in my ear, Sherelle. That means we need to take a break. When we come back, I want to switch gears and get a little bit closer to home. The main subject today I want to talk about is the gerrymandering that's going on in Texas out in the open, and how it has implications here in North Carolina and around the country. So stay right there. We'll be right back after this message.
Overnight, the Texas Senate passed the state's new congressional map after weeks of Democratic protests, sending it over to Governor Greg Abbott's desk. He's expected to quickly sign it into law.
State Democratic Senator Carol Alvarado had planned a long speech as a last-ditch effort to delay the measure, but Republicans blocked it before she could start.
My filibuster was shut down. They created an excuse to shut it down. I will not be silent, and I will not stop talking about this.
Despite wearing comfortable sneakers and a knee brace in preparation for her fight, the chamber was pushed to a final vote. Democrats say they plan to challenge the legislation in court.
And welcome back to our second segment of the conversation. I'm your host, Ed Clark. Sherelle James is here. It's Sunday, August 24th, 2025. And as we always do, we started out talking about some international and national news, and we ended up talking about the economy, Sherelle, and what's likely to happen if Jerome Powell does finally reduce some interest rates. We don't know. I think that's probably likely to happen. But in the meantime, tariffs continue to make a big dent in people's pocketbooks. There's some other things that we want to talk about now. Our friends down in Texas are in the midst of a heated battle over gerrymandering. And if people remember the story back in the day, back when the country was first formed, there was a guy named Mr. Geary. And up in Massachusetts, and they tried to draw a district to make it so that a particular person would win their seat. And since the term, we morphed it a little bit and called it gerrymandering instead of gerrymandering. And in Texas, they did it blatantly. The president of the United States, Sherelle, Mr. Donald J. Trump, got on TV and told the Texas governor that he needed five more seats because he needed to make sure that anything that the Republicans wanted to do in 2026 midterm, in that term for Congress, he wanted to make sure the Republicans did not have these very slim majorities and that he needed five more seats. So Texas obliged. They voted on five seats. They passed it this week, and that's it. You heard a little bit of that video of it, audio from it passing in the Texas legislature when we were coming back in from the break. Now, Sherelle, that seems very blatant to me. You know, you just go on TV and say, hey, Governor of Texas, y'all have a special session and give me five more seats. It doesn't seem to be representative, right? So what you end up doing is you end up packing districts with certain people. So now the Democrats are people like Jasmine Crockett, who they want to target in this, won't find it easy to, you know, retain their seat. They'll have to be in a different district or whatever. So let me stop talking. Tell me about what's going on in Texas, because they're also locking state representatives in bathrooms and keeping people from traveling around to try to force them to have a quorum so they can vote on these seats that remove Democrats from the possibility of having these five seats. Tell me what you know about what's going on in Texas.
Yeah, so the plan 88 to 52 along party lines. And it definitely could secure Republicans up to five more congressional seats ahead of the 2026 midterms. I'll just say that inside of this, Democrats, you may have heard on the news where Democrats were leaving Texas, and they were leaving so they couldn't vote on this bill, so that it couldn't go forward. It was their way of kind of protesting and saying, I'm not going to be here for this bill to go forward. They were gone for about 17 to 18 days. And when they came back, they pretty much told them they either had to stay in the chambers and they could go to their office, but they had to stay in the chambers, or they had to be released into Department of Public Safety's hands, meaning that they had somebody who followed them around. These are state legislators for Texas. Had to have Democratic state legislators, had to have someone who followed them around to make sure that they didn't leave back out of town until the vote could be had. And there was one particular representative, Representative Nicole Collier. She refused to sign the paperwork to be put into the Department of Public Safety's hands. There's pictures of her, and she did a couple of social media talks while she was there, just talking about what was happening, what was going on. There's pictures of her sitting in the chambers between two seats, sitting in one seat with her feet in the other, with her eye mask on and her pillow and her covers, because they locked the doors of the chamber and would not let her leave until she signed the paperwork, and she refused to sign it for 2 days. After that, they were able to go ahead and have the vote again along party lines, with there being more Republicans, so therefore the vote carrying. It lends to not only just Texas. You talked about it, Ed. It's not only about Texas, but it has had a national kind of spark, a national response from the Democratic side, and we talked about this in the break about California with Gavin Newsom, looking at saying, okay, this is what you're going to do. All right, we can play this game too. You talked about the difference, and I'll let you talk about the difference of what Gavin Newsom is doing or California is doing versus what was done in Texas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very different. So let me square up this, the rest of this Texas thing. So Donald Trump won 56-43 in Texas. But the current representatives in Texas is 71-29. So you go, well, hold on, wait a minute. They have 38 seats available, congressional seats. And you mean to tell me that they have 27 of them? Well, that doesn't math. It should be almost equal, right? But it's not. So right now it's 27 seats they have. What they are trying to do is guarantee themselves 30, and that would only leave the Democrats with 8 seats out of 38. Now, it should be closer to something like, I don't know, out of 38, maybe, you know, 20-18, if you do the math. So 10 seat difference. If you actually look at the map, and I would encourage people to do this, go to the Texas Tribune, and they have a map up. And if you look at the map, the only place where there's Democratic representation in the whole state of Texas is in Dallas, Houston, Austin, San Antonio, and El Paso. Well, Texas is big. And when you see it on a map and you see how they've drawn these districts, you'll go, wait a minute, to be sure. And I'm talking about these districts are very small and concentrated. In Houston, for example, you can get 2 or 3 districts just in Houston alone. So it's almost like the city centers are the only places where Democrats have representation, right? Well, the opposite would be true in California. So you asked me about California. California could do the same thing. California has even more representatives than Texas because the way we apportion seats in the House of Representatives is 435 people. You split them up. North Carolina got one extra, right? Because our population increased. That meant that New York lost a seat. So we got a seat. Michigan lost a seat, right? So Georgia got a seat. So California has the most seats with 50 some odd seats. Well, California could literally draw every single seat to make sure that Democrats won. Every single one of them.
They and neutralize could. Texas plan.
And completely neutralize Texas, and not only neutralize it, but ensure that they wipe it off completely. Well, Gavin Newsom has been trolling Donald Trump, and there have been some very famous, you know, posts that he's been making on Twitter, those kind of things. Instead of calling a special legislative session, though, they're putting a ballot on the ballot measure to change those congressional seats in the off year, so in 2025. Now, here's the problem, Sherelle, and we've talked about elections, and we're going to talk about it in the last segment here, because municipal elections are, and off-year elections are coming up here in Columbus County in southeastern North Carolina. Turnout is notoriously low in those off-year elections. And I have no doubt that they'll probably get enough people to pass the resolution that's on the ballot to redo the districts in California. But what I think my point will be here is that Democrats tend to bend over backwards to try to play by the rules, right? Instead of calling the special session like Greg Abbott did in Texas, Gavin Newsom said, well, the rules in California say you should have a referendum. So they're putting a referendum on the ballot. Now, there is a risk here, right? There's a risk that it might not pass because you can't get turnout. I think that'll be different this time because people are mad enough that it may make a difference. And so what happens in off-year elections, I was doing some looking before we came on, Sherelle. Turnout is sometimes as low as 10 and 15% in off-year elections. So that means you got to be really mad about something to vote, or you got to really feel like you got something to vote for in off-year elections, right? To make sure that whatever you decide you want to put on the ballot passes. So I have a feeling that it will pass in California. My fear, though, is that because of the way the Democrats approach things, they run a risk that it might not work. And then that means that when the session comes along in 2026 and Congress is sworn in, that the Republicans will have padded their majority by a few votes. So I'll leave it there and just say that go to the Texas Tribune and look at the GOP map that they just passed for Texas. And when you look at it, you're going to say, and I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican, you should say, well, that just smacks of being wrong. It's not right. That is not democracy. And that's what I think people have been warning about. I will make a disclosure here, Sherelle, that I don't have to make, but anybody can go to the Board of Elections website and look me up. I'm a registered independent. And I have been my whole registration, you know, career. And how I vote, because I've been a journalist, so I registered as an independent. So there would be nobody that would accuse me. Now, I will make an honest statement also that I am a progressive. I lean to the left. I believe in helping out people. I also believe in being fair. And if you look at the Texas districts, like I said, Dallas, San Antonio, Austin, Fort Worth, Houston, and El Paso are the only places that a Democrat could win a seat in the House of Representatives. If you go by the population of Texas, it should be maybe 20 to 18 in terms of representation. Right now, it's currently 27 to 11. And if things stay the way they are, it's almost guaranteed to be 30 to 8. Now, I don't know who does math around here. I'm not a math major, but percentage-wise, I did the maths. It's only 21% of the seats would be Democratic, when registered Democrats make up 42% of Texans. And to me, that smacks of being not right. Now, if California passes theirs, it to offset these and maybe come up with more than five seats, I'm pretty sure there are going to be people screaming who say that's not fair. But I guess my question is long-winded, but Sherelle, are we just going to be in a continual tit for tat on these kind of things? And that's the, you know, that's just how we're going to end up politically until the MAGA movement sort of goes away and Donald Trump finally fades off into the sunset? Or are we bound to have this forever and ever and ever?
In some ways, it's always been here, right? It hadn't been. I think that right now it's a lot more glaring and a lot more at stake at this moment. And I'm not minimizing previous times when I say that, but because we are here today, there is a lot more at stake today. Inside of that, I don't know. You know, you brought up a good question, and I think it's one that we will just have to wait for a few years to see. If this administration's influence, we know that anything that a president does or their administration does, it bleeds over to the next administration, right? In a lot of ways. We've seen that happen where other presidents get blamed for what the past president did because the repercussions come to the new president, not the one who originally did whatever the thing was. It will be interesting to see if this is a four-year thing or if this is long-lasting. And right now, I don't know. There's a lot of momentum that's happening here. This is what I say. We talk a lot about it's important to vote. It's important to know who you're putting in office. And think that if we continue to not show up in non-major election years, right? If we continue to not show up in years where there's just local or municipality voting that needs to happen, this could last a lot longer than 4 years. But if we start putting qualified people in the roles that they need to be in, people who have your interests, and that's whatever side you're on, your interests, then I think that you could see a change inside of this. But it's going to be interesting. I think you bring up an interesting point. Is this just for this administration term? Is this long lasting? I think it's too early to see at this moment because there's so much happening so fast. And not to say that it's permanent, because nothing is permanent. A lot of it is in the courts right now, right? Trying to decide, is this right or is this wrong? But inside of that, it's so much coming so fast. What sticks and what sticks longer than 4 years? It's going to be very interesting to see.
Yeah. Well, I know that the General Assembly is back in session on Monday. My office is literally... Well, I can't throw a rock there, but I can get there in a couple of minutes to the General Assembly. And one of the things that I'll be interested in is how this session is going to go, if there's going to be any pressure in the General Assembly. You can't gerrymander North Carolina any more than it's gerrymandered at this point, I don't believe. There hasn't been any talk of that. But obviously there will be some talk of maybe trying to overturn some more of Governor Stein's vetoes that they weren't able to overturn in the last little short session that they had. My guess is that most of the legislation, if there is any, is going to be around trying to solidify whatever power that the General Assembly has over the governor, particularly in things like commissions and things like that, places where they can try to limit the governor's powers in the executive branch power so that they can't spend money, for example. Now, one of the things that's going to be interesting to me as we shift more to North Carolina focus here in these last few minutes in this segment is that there still needs to be a lot done in Western North Carolina. I've told the story so far that if people have been listening, that one of the companies that I own, we've been doing some work in Western North Carolina to help with recovery. And I attended a workshop a couple of weeks ago down in Pinehurst, and one of the sessions was on where does North Carolina go in terms of disaster recovery. And the talk was about how nonprofit groups and the state of North Carolina was going to have to take on a bigger role because the White House has been adamant that they want to get rid of FEMA. If not get rid of it, to change it fundamentally and force the states to do more of the work. We've talked about, Sherelle, in the last month, how $11 million was taken away from southeastern North Carolina, Robeson County, Columbus County, Bladen County, Brunswick County, to repair from past hurricane damage to do some mitigation. That money is gone. I also found out when I was in Pinehurst, they also took away several billion dollars to the whole entire state that now is in limbo, that is not likely to even reach the people in Western North Carolina. And these are people who voted for Donald Trump. So North Carolina's rainy day fund is either going to have to be raided to take money. There was $59 billion, 59 B, billion, billion dollars of damage in Helene, Sherelle. That number kept getting thrown around when I was in Pinehurst. $59 billion is not money that's just laying around, not for any state. And North Carolina is one of the richest states in the country. And you know what? I hear some music in my ear. That means we need to take a break. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to finish talking about what's likely to happen in the General Assembly, who's running for Senate against Roy Cooper, and then some Columbus County news. And I want to find out what the score was for the Whiteville-West Columbus football game, too. So stay right there. We'll be right back after this minute. Somebody help me. And welcome back to our third and final segment of the conversation. I'm your host, Ed Clark. Sherelle James is here. It is Sunday, August 24th. The weather looks nice today. It's a little cooler, Sherelle. It is fall, or starting to be fall. Will be fall soon. And we know that because football started this week. I'm going to go ahead and say I did not make it to the Whiteville-West Columbus football game. I had intended to, but again, I'm doing a little bit of recuperating, so I didn't make it. So I hope to be attending some sporting events down there and getting out in the community. Whiteville won 48-8 over West Columbus, so congratulations to Whiteville for winning the game. And I'm sure if you talk to people in Whiteville, they would say, well, that's exactly how it should have been. My alma mater, Sherelle, Harnett Central, the Trojans, the mighty Trojans down in Harnett County, they beat Lakewood by a lot, 55-7. So, and they're looking pretty good. I think Harnett Central will make it into the playoffs again this year. Just an aside, they reconfigured all the schools. Now there's 8A, so it's 1A through 8A, and then there's even 8-man football in North Carolina. And I was looking at, there's now over close to 500 teams, high schools that have teams in North Carolina. So North Carolina is a big state. And where we ended up, Sherelle, was talking about politics in North Carolina and what's likely to happen in the General Assembly. And one of those things that's likely to be talked about in the General Assembly is funding for schools. Because the Department of Education rescinded some grants in Moore County, for example. I saw a story in, I don't remember if it was Politico, Wall Street Journal, somewhere, that talked about how teachers were leaving places like Moore County, but probably like Columbus County and Bladen County too, and going to New Hanover County, for example, or going to Wake County, or going to Mecklenburg County, because they have more money to be able to pay better salaries. There was an exodus of teachers in Moore County. Moore County voted for Donald Trump 60% to 40%, something like that, right? But they were penalized because the program that Donald Trump wanted to eliminate, that people said promoted woke education, and it really didn't. It promoted giving counties money to get a diverse teacher workforce. Because it had the word diverse workforce in it, they eliminated the program. Nearly all the teachers in Moore County, any additional money they were getting was funded from that money. What they meant by diverse teachers were finding math teachers, right? And so in the story, one of the better math teachers they had no choice but to leave and go to Mecklenburg County. Because now that you're not getting this federal money, Sherelle, where is money going to come from? Sherelle, talk to me real quick about biting off your nose to spite your face in this case. This is a classic example of that, where Moore County, Lincoln County, probably Columbus County, counties that voted for Donald Trump will probably suffer because that money is no longer available to fund teacher bonuses and those kind of things, and what kind of pressure that puts on the General Assembly.
Let me bring it more home, Ed, because you say county. County ain't got nothing to do with me. I'm not the county. Mm. The children in the county will suffer. The parents in the county will suffer. The schools in the county will suffer because there's not enough teachers to teach the children, to give the proper education to children, to make sure those diverse areas where teachers are needed that may not be your core curriculum areas are now, typically you pay them more, right? Because they're in more specialized areas. They're not there now. So yes, the county suffers, but if we could bring it just to the human being, families suffer, children suffer. So they don't have, the education may not be as competitive as somewhere else, because if you can't afford the teacher because you don't have that money anymore, I can't blame the teacher for going somewhere so they can provide for their families, right? So that they can make the money that they need to make to just live. I don't know about you, but I'm accustomed to four walls and a roof, a little bit of food from time to time, some air and heat from time to time.
That would be nice.
That would be nice. And so inside of that, I'm making a little lighter situation, but it is really, really not a light situation. I'm just saying that I can't blame the teachers. But we do have to look at sometimes in policy, and this happens all the time. And I'll take it from business because I work with a lot of business owners. A lot of times you can cut too much when you're cutting into critical needs where you can't produce what you're meant to produce, period. And in this case, we can't produce quality education in the case of Moore County, Montgomery County, and some other counties that are out there. Can't produce the quality education because one, they're in rural areas to start with. And then two, the money, you took the money away because you felt that I was pushing DEI and that whole agenda, woke agenda in that way, not understanding when this grant was written, what it really was saying. There does need to be representation across the board for all kids. I just am a proponent and believer in that, representation matters, period. I don't care who you are, where you come from, you need to see representation in classrooms. You need to see representation in those who are your legislators. You need to see representation in your leaders across the board. That means that we should be diverse. But because of that, and because of them trying to do a good thing, and make sure they got good quality teachers that also allowed for some diversity in sense, the money was taken. It's sad. It's sad.
Yeah, it is sad. It is sad. And I don't know how you encourage people to go into the teaching profession when, you know, I'll talk about my college that I matriculated to, UNC Chapel Hill, when they paid $21 million for a football coach.
Well, it speaks to why we're behind as a society when we look at the world.
yeah.
Where we decide to put our dollars, because your dollars tell you where your priorities are.
Yeah.
And so when we look at where our dollars are going, our priority is on entertainment more than it is on education.
I don't know what you call it, Sherelle. I mean, again, you've traveled to other countries and been in other countries. I have too. We've traveled to nearly every state. I'm making plans to try to go to Alaska because I haven't been there.
Yeah.
I've been to 48 of the 50 states. I need to get to Alaska. This past year has taught me that I got a few things that I need to get done. But if you go around the country, everybody's struggling to figure out how to pay for education. Well, and we talk all the time about how important education is. Southeastern Community College is opening up a transportation hub. I saw it where around $20 million is being appropriated to the General Assembly. Thank goodness for, you know, them having some foresight, but to teach truck driver training, diesel engine repair, some other skills that are transferable, right, that will hopefully lead to jobs. But it's a little dichotomous right now to think about it, though, when electric vehicles are a potential of taking out the whole diesel industry. So on one hand, you want that kind of money to be spent at a place like Southeast Community College that services Columbus County, right? However, are those skills transferable? Should we be doing more stuff in the public high school? Sherelle, I was in FFA. I'm gonna reveal a secret to people. I have my blue jacket is still in the closet at my mom's house. I was also in shop class. I took shop class all 4 years. So I was in the group that built the house. That was our yearly project. We built a house and we would auction it off for the to raise money for the school. I took masonry class. Now I also went to college. And so you're like, well, none of those programs seem to go. But that means that when I go home, I know how to do stuff around the house. And there is a value in teaching those kind of skills. At some point, I would love to get somebody from Columbus County Board of Education, some of those people on the program to talk about what it's like trying to run a school system in these times. Because we fund schools by local money. And then there became for, you know, when the Department of Education came online in the 70s, we knew that there was inadequate funding. So then grant programs sprung up. So I bet you can go to any school district and they have a grants person who spent their whole day every day trying to figure out how to get money. And it didn't matter if the district voted Democrat or Republican, they depended on federal grant money. Because if you wanted to allow kids with disability to come to school and they had a walker, right? Well, you needed to build a ramp. Where did that money come from? Chances are it came from the federal government. If you had kids that were in some other special needs programs, right? Where did that come from? You needed computers for a school. Where did that money come from? It did not come from the tax dollars because the tax base can't support it. So if you look at a place like, and again, since we're in Columbus County, if you look at a place like Columbus County, there were some developments that were on the table. One for 1,500 homes that looks like it's going to be delayed. That would be revenue. There was another development that I saw that maybe was somebody had talked about 4,500 homes, right? Just think about what the tax base would be if you had that money. And then West Columbus High School or Whiteville High School or East Columbus High School or whatever, Tabor City, what they could do with their school if they had that additional funding. Those are the kind of issues that are going to be on the table that we need to talk about. In addition to that, you got all these other pressures. Now, again, we talked about the elimination of FEMA funding here several weeks ago for mitigation. I want to get somebody from the town of Whiteville on, too, to talk about what it's going to look like in terms of being able to deal with the flooding situation in Whiteville and how much that's going to cost. Because here's the knock-on effect, right? If I got to do something to try to mitigate for flooding or whatever, the town's going to need to use more of the money and the county's going to need to use more of the money or so on and so forth. So it can't trickle down to other things, to other development and to schools and those kind of things, because counties and cities have budgets. So, Sherelle, that brings us to, as we wind down the program today, talking about realistically why it's important for people to be concerned about, I won't call it politics, but the politic of being a citizen, right? That you have a responsibility to other people around you and in the community, or whatever, blah, blah. I'm really big on that, right? Why is it? And I have a theory that everybody watches shows and they think they're going to be rich one day or can be rich, right? And that rich people being rich means that you have a whole bunch of money and you have yachts and several houses and all that other stuff. And you don't necessarily think about other people, that it's all about acquiring what you can acquire. And we don't have an altruistic streak in us anymore. Is that true? Are we just that selfish, Sherelle, where it's, it all comes down to that we need to accumulate as much wealth as we can, and it doesn't matter what happens to other people and everybody's on their own?
I think that a couple of things you said. Let me go back real quick, because you said FFA, and it really brought up to me. So FFA, Future Farmers of America, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was in FBLA. Future Business Leaders of America. And I forgot about that until you said FFA. And I was like, oh my gosh, wow. You know, yes, those are great programs. And I think that they're definitely needed, but they got to be paid for. So I want to just say yes to that. Now, getting back to this, we have become a society that I call a garage society. Mm. Do you know what that is, Ed?
Where you just live in your, you go right into your garage and don't come out.
You drive in, you drive out. That's it. If it's not within where I'm going, then I'm not concerned about it, right? You drive in, drive out. And I really had a conversation with my brother, a baby brother. He's 12 years younger than me. And I have a sister 10 years younger than me. And I raised both of them. But I was talking to my baby brother because I didn't like someone that my sister was dating. To your point, I'm going to your point, Ed. I know you're like, where is she going with this? But to your point, and his comment to me was, well, if that's what she wants to do. And my comment to him was, well, I don't, he said, well, you can't force anybody to do anything. I said, no, it's not about forcing anybody to do anything. But sometimes people are in the forest. You can't see the whole forest if you're in the forest. You understand what I'm saying? So In society, just take that to whatever topic you want to take it to. But in society, sometimes you on the outside can see things that people on the inside can't see because they're in it for whatever reason. And so, and this is the conversation I had with him. And I said, so if I know you're going to travel down the road and there's a hole in the road that you would get stuck in, am I supposed to just say, oh, well, sucks for him. He's going to get stuck in that hole and continue on my journey either way? Or should I stop and at least tell you? Now, once I make you aware, awareness, you got a choice. But you have a more educated choice now because you have some awareness about whatever the issue or topic is. You understand what I'm saying? Now, if you could choose to continue down and get stuck in the hole, okay, that's a whole different scenario. But I think that as African-Americans, and this is a primarily African-American station, correct?
Mm-hmm.
We have lost village and community. That's where we come from.
Yeah.
But as we have assimilated into trying to be like our counterparts, to have the bigger house, to have the better cars, to have the better clothes, all these things are material.
Mm.
We think that I have to do that while leaving everybody else behind. Now, I'm not saying that they have a choice. So if they're deadbeat or lazy or whatever, then that's something totally different, right? I'm not saying you drag people along. That's not what I'm saying. But I can make you aware. I can educate along the way. I remember younger years, late 20s, early 30s, that I used to go to the spa all the time, and I've always gone for manicures and pedicures, summer, winter, doesn't matter the season, I've always gone. And I had some girlfriends that had never been to the spa, never gone to get manicures. And I used to take them, not because I'm all of that, but because I want you to have this experience. And years later, we've been friends for 15, 20 years, years later, they come back to say, because of what you exposed me to or helped me with or whatever it was, I've been doing this and it has improved my life because of this.
Mm.
Now I'm using something as simple as manicures, pedicures, and spa, but you can take that again to whatever topic you want to take it to, right?
Yeah.
We are here to not just build ourselves, but to impact others.
Yeah. Yeah.
The world can't live without each other. No man's an island. Yeah. And I'll leave it there.
Well, I hear you. And I also hear some music. So that means we got to go. I'm working on something, Sherelle. There was a story that showed up on a website called The Assembly that covers the General Assembly. That's how I keep up with General Assembly news. But they had a story this week about Columbus County. It's abandoned pools in Columbus County. It's a very interesting story. The name of the reporter is Ben Rappaport. So I got a call into him. I'm trying to get him for next week because it's about water safety on one hand, about how many children drown. It's also about Columbus County was declared to be one of the unhealthiest counties in the whole country. And I want to get to the bottom of some of those things. So we're working on that for next week. Anyway, in the meantime, I want you to go out and do something good for somebody today. Stick around for the sermon right after us, Sunday sermon from Reverend Holmes from Life Changers Church. Then gospel music until 6 o'clock. After that, disco music. And this week, I wanted to do something different and then stay overnight and be back with us tomorrow morning for more gospel music. So thank you for listening. Have a good weekend and a good week. Bye.
Ever since, it's been a long time coming, but I know.